At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Juan Castillo, and today we are going to be speaking with Eric Clemens. He's the CEO and president of the Connecticut Center for Arts and Technology, that's CONCAT, and also Carlton Highsmith. He's chairman of the board. And we're going to be talking about some of the great things that are happening in Newhallville, some of the great things that are happening in Science Park. Eric, I mean, Carlton has been here already, but you, I've been trying to run you now forever. Even from back in the days at LEAP, right? You know, so thank you so much for coming, man. Yeah,
thank you for having me, Juan. All right. I really appreciate that.
Well, let's get started, man. Like, first of all, before we get into this, you know, people don't know you, man. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, you know, where you're from and what you're all about.
Great. Right? So I'm originally from Norwalk, Connecticut.
Okay.
Born and raised. I'm a Carver kid, so I don't know if many people know about the Carver Foundation.
All right. Yes.
Born and raised in the Carver Foundation and moved here in 2000, my wife and I and our four daughters. So we've been here for 17 years. And as you mentioned quite briefly, you know, I ran LEAP for 3 years from 2007 to 2010. And then this idea of the Connecticut Center for Arts and Technology was presented to me, and I was able to meet probably the premier social entrepreneur in this country, Bill Strickland, who had came to New Haven. And also I was able to meet our chairman of the board here, Mr. Carlton Highsmith. And it was a monumental meeting one afternoon in February 2011. And myself and Carl and Bill Strickland had this 3-hour conversation about how do we save the world.
Yes.
And never talked about this idea of CONCAT.
Okay.
Which was the impetus I believed for the meeting. And I walked away from that meeting thinking that I could someday be a Carlton Highsmith or Bill Strickland. And so from that meeting, a couple months later, I signed on to build and run CONCAT with Mr. Highsmith and Mr. Strickland. So that's a quick feature of who I am. So much more, but you know, to the point.
Yeah, and I got to bring you back so we can go into all of that, right?
I would love
today's about CONCAT. So let me ask you this, right? Okay, so you're at LEAP, mm-hmm. working with kids, mm-hmm. and you know, and here is Newhallville. Here's Science Park, something that the city and Yale said, okay, you know what? We're gonna do something with this because, you know, the gun manufacturers left, mm-hmm. and they went overseas, and we lost a lot of jobs, and kids have nowhere to go. Kids have no training to be able to go and do the types of things that their parents were able to send them to college and other places because of those jobs that were here, mm-hmm. right? And so tell me how this dream went from that conversation to what we have today.
Great question. So it was really about, one, selfishly, how could I make a deeper footprint in New Haven and create greater impact? I thought my time at LEAP was great, but talking with Carlton and talking with Bill Strickland and other people, and also my wife, realizing that I could make it an opportunity to make greater impact, and always this idea of the calling, right? What is the
yes.
calling on my life? What is the thing that chose me as opposed to what I chose? And so we had chose to work in Science Park, one, because it's in the midst of cutting-edge technology, mm-hmm. while at the same time in the midst of Newhallville.
Yes.
Historically, one of the most depressed neighborhoods in New Haven.
My home.
Yet, one of the most enriching neighborhoods, if not the most enriching neighborhoods in New Haven, in terms of people and building stock and those types of things. And so here we are looking at how do we create more viable citizens, especially those who look like us. It wasn't about creating jobs, right? There's this shout for jobs.
Yes.
It was about how do we train people for the jobs that are available or would be available. And so there was a lot of feasibility in the beginning, in the front end, whereby we met and talked with Yale New Haven Hospital, the second largest employer, in the city and ask them what is market relevant and what is their immediate need. Because we wanted to train people for those jobs at Yale New Haven Hospital first and especially.
Right.
And so there's a training at our space and a pathway to a job at the hospital. If not the hospital, definitely those in the system of the hospital, which is Bridgeport Hospital and others, and also Quest Diagnostics. So that was really important to us, that we weren't just training folks for something that didn't exist. We were training them for something that was needed.
I'm going to get over here to Carlton Highsmith, chairman of the board at Concat, and very good friend. Thank you so much for coming. You've been an entrepreneur, and your background has always it's been in, you know, business and providing, you know, because I know I had you here before, and you've actually done, you know, your company has done packaging for different companies and That's so right. forth and so on. So far removed from what you're doing now, but tell me about from that meeting and what did you see for New Hawkville personally?
Well, I think first, if I could go back a little bit to
yes.
I've since sold my business.
Yes, exactly.
Right. A large private equity firm bought me in 2009, and I was actually having a meeting with the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven, Will Ginsburg, setting up some scholarships and some other things in New Haven I wanted to do, and he suggested that I talk to this Bill Strickland from Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Now, I'd never met Bill before. I had never read his book. And so I met with Bill, and what an incredible individual. Listening to his life story, how it was transformed in high school from his being a dropout failure statistic on the streets of Pittsburgh to going on to the University of Pittsburgh, getting a degree, starting this incredible training center in Pittsburgh, winning global recognition for the incredible work. Listening to that story caused me to pause for a moment because I just sold my business. I was about to go off and become
Do
a scratch
nothing.
Golfer. Yeah, exactly. You got it. And I had been so consumed by running the business, Wanda, that I had not paid enough attention to the community around me. And I looked and I saw so much potential unleashed, yet to be unleashed. Because most people don't know this, but the great black migration impacted my family in a really big way. I had uncles and aunts, cousins who fled the South in the 40s and 50s and 60s for New Haven. And they all worked at Winchester Repeating Arms.
There you go.
I remember coming and what a vibrant place New Hawville was.
Yes.
Dixwell Plaza, all the great places to eat. And so actually, in the summers of 1968 and 69, I actually worked at Winchester Repeating Arms. Most people don't realize that.
Oh, really?
But the year before I went to college, I was a full-time employee at Winchester. And so I saw how the city had just been so decimated because they left. And I said, you know, before I go off to become a scratch golfer, I wanted to sort of see if I could make a contribution to helping to transform the community. And when Bill Strickland and I met, I went to Pittsburgh, I saw his center, came back. Will Ginsburg asked if I would be interested in sort of leading a community effort to get this idea of Concat started, reached out to about 30 community folks. They all showed up at the Community Foundation. And we met for several months, talking about it, sort of describing what we were looking to do.
Before you go on,
sure.
Can you tell me about his center in Pittsburgh? Can
yes.
you tell us about that?
Great question.
It's called Manchester Bidwell.
Okay.
It is a training center in one of the most depressed areas of Pittsburgh. Bill started it about 40 years ago, training ex-steel workers to become vibrant employees of the pharmaceutical industry, healthcare industry in Pittsburgh. He added programs over the years to include phlebotomy, medical coding and billing, lab technician, culinary arts. And so this center had become sort of a transformative impetus for that part of Pittsburgh. And so other people started to come to this part of Pittsburgh, and it sort of transformed the entire community. So much so that Bill won a MacArthur Genius Prize for the work, where he focused on atmosphere, environment, transforming people's lives.
Wow.
Using fresh flowers and sunlight and jazz playing in the background as a way to inspire poor people to what they really could become.
Yes.
A very simple idea, a very simple notion. And so he started to go to cities around the country, talk to local community leaders about starting these centers. So San Francisco started a center. Cincinnati started one. Cleveland, Ohio. Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he had come to New Haven to talk to New Haveners about starting a center. So that's where the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven got involved to sort of put together a group of people about wanting to start a center. And so Ginsburg asked if I would lead the advisory group. And we met for several months, talked about how much money we'd have to raise. The number was $6 million. We needed $6 million to be raised before you could start a center. So I started to ask around people. And after a few months, we had raised the $6 million.
Right.
And I went back to Mr. Ginsburg at the foundation to say, we're ready to start to find talented people like Mr. Strickland, Mr. Clemens here. And Ginsburg said to me, he said, you've raised $6 million. You've been only at it for about 6 months.
Right.
I said, well, yeah. He said, you know how hard it is to raise $6 million? I said, well, you didn't tell me how hard it was. You said to go out and do it. So that's what we did.
Yeah.
And so that's one why I decided to become really involved. And we've spent almost a year planning and pulling this thing all together. And when we were introduced to Mr. Clemens here, Eric, and he has been absolutely a gem, because all that work I had been doing that year, I had files galore. I moved all the files over to him and said, here you go, my man. It's all yours now.
And then you went to play some golf. So by the way, family out there, this is Juan Castillo, Electric Drum, of course. I'm speaking with Eric Clemens, the CEO and president of CONCAT, and I'm Carlton Highsmith, chairman of the board at CONCAT. And we're talking about this wonderful program that, you know, that a lot of people don't know about. And I've been, you know, wanting to get these men here to talk about it and to let New Haven know what's going on. So, Eric, let me go to you now. Okay, so in the process of putting this together, right, mm-hmm. you did some research on in terms of what types of jobs and that were really you going to be your focus and your training, mm-hmm. Based on what New Haven was all about, right? So yes. so you localized it, right? Yes. You sort of didn't invent the same thing from the other cities.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
But before that, right?
Yes.
In a genius way, Carlton had aptly named CONCAT the Connecticut Center for Arts and Technology, not the New Haven Center for Arts and Technology, because we wanted to be able to scale what we've done in New Haven throughout the country. And I think we'll get back to that part, but that's
okay.
Really important if we're talking about the name.
Yes.
But again, we did feasibility. We pinned down two trainings that were considered viable by Yale New Haven Hospital. And then we designed trainings based on that information from Yale New Haven Hospital, medical billing and coding and phlebotomy. But also, secondly, there's a second part of what we do is arts after-school programming and summer programming for kids who have been identified as underachieving by their respective schools in New Haven Public School and Hamden Public School. And so we signed an MOU with Fran Rabinowitz, who was the superintendent in Hamden at the time, and also with Dr. Reggie Mayo, who was the superintendent at the time, whereby we would work with their guidance counselors in the school's grades K through six. We take grades 5 through 8 students. K through 8. And so the other side of what we do is really immerse kids in the arts, right? And we use the arts as a vehicle for academic achievement.
Like what, for instance?
What a host of arts media. We do videography. We have a black, green, and blue screen on the wall in our art studio.
Yes.
We have a large art studio. We have photography classes for the kids. We have digital cameras. All the kids have digital cameras. We have a dance floor as well. We have a spoken word hip hop poetry.
Wow.
We have an iMac lab. We built a lab with, we furnished iMac machines in that lab where the kids do Photoshop and, a host of other things, but also we built an art gallery. So when the kids produce the art that they thought about, we hang it, we install their productions in our art gallery.
So this is all happening at the same time that you're dealing with the other more vocational type of...
Not the same time during the day. So
okay, go ahead.
Same building. So in the morning, 8:30 to 2:30, we're in an adult job training program.
Yes.
From 2:45 to 6:00 in the evening, we are in an after-school program.
Wow.
Yes. Same building. And Carlton alluded to this idea of beauty, right? That Bill's formula, which we adopted as well, that if we create a beautiful space with fresh flowers, open space, natural light, bright colors, art on the wall, jazz being played, that those things are ingredients to transforming people's lives. That people come into a space, and because of its beauty, they feel enriched, they feel worthy and worthwhile because of that space that was built for them.
Right.
And it's you know, I always say, like, logic is the new innovation, right? It's a very logical idea that you know, you get people to believe that they can do something they never thought they could because of the space that was designed for them.
Now, the health field is fastest growing mm-hmm. of anything. You know, obviously, in the news, talking about Obamacare and mm-hmm. Repeal and all of that, right? So, since you focused on that in that area, right? Tell me, how successful have you been with that?
Incredibly successful. Yes. And so it's worthy to note that we were fully operational in June 2012. And this June will be 5 years of existence. We are about 73% job placement rate. So 73% of the people who have trained and finished and graduated from CONCAT are now working in jobs all over this city, all over this state in the medical field. Secondly, which I know we'll get to, we were looking at the data, my staff and I, and also the board, and we were realizing that our medical training programs were really swayed towards heavily gendered on with women.
Okay.
And also, our medical training programs didn't really allow us to engage the reentry population, which is really important.
Especially
these days.
Right.
And so we started thinking about what could we do next that would allow us to bring in more men to our programs, especially men of color, and also we would address the issue of reentry, folks who have been incarcerated. And so we tossed around a few ideas. We did feasibility again and thought about automotive and culinary arts.
Wow.
And so we went and visited Bill again, spent a day with Bill Strickland, knowing he had a full culinary arts program and an amphitheater. And we decided to do culinary arts. And so 2014, we got some architectural renderings, same quality of design, and started designing downstairs, 9,000 square feet downstairs, a culinary arts academy, but also we wanted to open a restaurant, which would be an extension of the culinary arts academy.
Yes.
And so we did that as well.
Yeah, I'll never forget that evening, Juan. It was November 4th, 2014. We had the artist renditions of what the space was going to look like. We decided to have, you know, a jazz combo come, wine and cheese, and invite the community just to show them what we were planning. And also sort of launch a fundraising capital campaign saying, we're interested in building a world-class culinary arts program here in New Haven in CONCAT. And so, to our surprise, we had 375 people. The place was packed.
Yes.
Jam. Bill Strickland was here. Mm-hmm. The mayor was there. She had remarks. Bill Strickland had remarks. Eric and I. So we totally agreed, this is what we're looking to do, and we want to kick off the capital campaign tonight. And we expected it to take us a year to 18 months to raise the $2.5 million we'd need to open that kitchen. Much to my surprise, that evening, family pulled me aside and said, this is really neat stuff you guys are doing here at CONCAT. What would you say if we gave you $1 million tonight to get started earlier?
Oh,
and I said, well, I think we can manage to find a way to accelerate that program.
Yes.
So as a result of that incredible gift that evening, we opened the Culinary Arts Program in January 2015, a full year and a half ahead of what we had planned. So we graduated our first cohort
last year.
They're all working?
And they're 100% dead. Now, our first culinary arts cohort are graduated, and all of them are working, 100% job placement. Now, the second cohort they're just about to finish. They have 2 weeks left, and 90% of them all have externship. It's worthy to say also every student who comes to CONCAT, we promise them and get them an externship. And that is where they really show their mettle, right?
Yes.
All that they've learned throughout the year, that's where they show what they can do on their externship.
And before we go too far, we should just reiterate, Juan, that we don't charge for our training programs.
At all.
At all.
None.
So
wow.
Our students pay nothing. We do require that you make a commitment, though, that you're going to show up, you're going to work hard, represent us well when you go to externships and to on your job placements, because that's a reflection on CONCAT. But because of the money we raise, we don't charge for any of the services we provide at CONCAT.
Wow.
Full free uniforms, free books,
cutlery,
free knife sets, cutlery, everything.
Yes.
Absolutely. And what's worthy...
Is the restaurant open?
Yes, it is. We've officially opened the restaurant, what was it, last month?
Last month.
Yeah.
Yeah, the governor was there to help us kick it off.
All right. Exactly. Yeah, Governor Moy and...
I got to do a live broadcast from there.
I would love for you.
I want to do a live broadcast from there.
It's a beautiful space.
I'm going to tell you that right now.
I would love
for you. It is awesome. Absolutely.
It's a beautiful space.
No question.
Very much like upstairs, if not the same. The same bones, same ingredients, natural light, fresh flowers, open space. Beautiful color, beautiful art on the walls. Whether it's front of the house or back of the house, has the same level of dignity. And that's really, really important. This idea of dignity is really important.
Building character.
Absolutely.
Yep, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So, wow. I'm flabbergasted. I mean, I did know that you were doing something up there on the hill, but this is fantastic.
Well, there's another element on too.
Yes, go ahead.
Before we go so far. I believe very much in entrepreneurship, business ownership, minority business ownership. I think it's a powerful way to transform sort of community. You know, my personal narrative is an example.
Of course.
So I have a relationship with Quinnipiac University. Actually, I'm vice chair of the board at Quinnipiac University. And I also endowed a chair in entrepreneurship there a couple of years ago. And one of the conditions of that endowed chair was that that professor, when he was hired, would help us at CONCAT, help us launch an entrepreneurship academy. And so we've done that. We have an entrepreneurship academy at CONCAT. Last summer, it was fully launched last summer. This summer is going to be twice the size it was last year, which includes not just high school kids, but it's going to include New Haven Promise college students.
Okay.
They're going to spend 2 to 3 weeks, 3 weeks for the college kids on Quinnipiac's campus, being taught by Quinnipiac's college professors and graduate students. We're going to have business case competition, business plan competition. And the actual winners of the competition are actually going to accompany our professor to the University of Budapest in Hungary for a week of study with international students. So we sort of brought to Newhallville, Dixwell, world-class entrepreneurship training for the kids in New Haven.
It's amazing.
Now, the neighborhood is transforming right now. Mm-hmm. You guys are very much a part of that. Mm-hmm. Tell me about, you know, how do you see yourselves in our neighborhood? And that transformation.
I think we see ourselves, and also I think larger institutions see us, larger institutions in New Haven and around Connecticut, see us as what they call a catalytic organization, right? An organization by which they can do their work through the Connecticut Center for Arts and Technology. And so, as we were talking earlier, there's a lot of eyes on Newhallville in terms of development, redevelopment, and so forth, and probably pouring a lot of capital into Newhallville. Now, the trick is, and quite frankly, we want to make sure that those who live in Newhallville leverage what is going on first,
yes,
or what would go on first in Newhallville. And that's really important to us, and that's why it's important that we be in that neighborhood, especially now.
Yeah, I think, Juan, I think we're helping Science Park fulfill its original promise.
Mm-hmm.
If you think back to sort of the rationale for Science Park even coming to existence, it was to help those who were displaced by Winchester leaving.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And has Science Park really fulfilled that promise? We think that there have been some deficiencies. And so we think now our being there will help that corporation, that Science Park Development Corporation, fulfill its promise, its original promise to the community. We certainly have become a meeting place of sorts, a center for the community. The other thing that we do, we open our doors to community groups who want to have meetings and gatherings at CONCAT. And I can tell you, some of the forums we've had there involving the community over the last 5 years has been absolutely amazing. The quality of community engagement, community use of our space.
Well, you know, among our folks, black people, right? You know, gentrification is like a bad word, right? You know, and I talked to you guys earlier. You know, I've seen it in my own neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York, in Bedford-Stuyvesant, and the experiment has worked, right? Because it is an experiment when you talk about that, right? Because you're forcing an issue to make it happen, mm-hmm. right? You know, you're not just letting the neighborhood grow basically on its own, right? So you're like you're making plans. And you're involving people, you're involving the community to make this neighborhood better, right? In the past, it was like, okay, you know, it's going to happen through osmosis or whatever, and people and individuals are just going to take advantage of this and that. And that didn't work in New Orleans, you know? And so now, you know, we have an opportunity mm-hmm. to do it right, right? You know, and I'm glad that you guys are going to be right there on the cusp of it because... You know, it's a part of our city that has rich historical value.
Absolutely, it does. Absolutely. Without question. And I think the key one, and you said it earlier, it has to be engagement of the people. They have to have a say and feel they have a say in what happens to the future of their neighborhood. Because gentrification, in most cases, means high rents. Most mm-hmm. people are afraid because of high rent. Well, that's a sensitivity. So, you know, whatever you bring, whatever you're going to sort of use as a way to advance the community, must take into consideration how to make it affordable for the people who live there.
Yes.
And other people who sort of don't have the means, a place where they can live as well. That's something we've heard over and over again from the folks in Waldo about making sure that whatever is done, rents remain affordable to people who live there.
And ideally, we would want to train folks, their children come to our arts programs after school and summer, and we have a space at Lincoln Bassett School as well,
okay.
called the Comcast Center at Lincoln Bassett School.
Wow.
But also adults being trained with their kids at Comcast and now trained and viable working people who now can own a home in New Hawville, right? Not just afford the rent, but afford owning a home.
Exactly.
And that's the ideal situation, right? That's how we leverage the situations that are going on.
I want to talk about entrepreneurship. I'm going to go to Carlton for that secondly. But first, I want to ask you, right? Tell me about your staff.
Oh, wow.
Tell me about your staff.
And thank you, because I was going to mention that.
Yeah, of course.
They are an amazing group of people. And I will say that there's one thing that I'm proud of and I would hang my hat on and wouldn't be modest about is, you know, I remember when we were building Comcast, Carlton and I, and it was time, as he said, he pushed all that work over and we got a building, and now we are going to design, and design is almost finished. So now
you've been busy.
Yes, thank you. And so now I have to hire folks to grab onto the work now that is piled up. And it was around the time of the economic downturn, folks, high unemployment, and everyone that I was interviewing was unemployed. And so I went to Carlton, and I said, you know, I want to ask you this. I said, I have an idea to hire folks for these jobs that we're creating through Comcast who don't have a job. And he thought about it. And he said, okay. He said, let's see how it goes.
And to do that, you know, most of us look at, because, you know, I hire all the time. Most of us, it's about, okay, I know you're working somewhere, so therefore you're more valuable.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So people don't understand about that, right? So go ahead.
You're absolutely correct.
Yes.
And so I believe that the your resume gets you the interview. It shouldn't get you the job. Mm. And so I chose to hire everyone who worked at Comcast when we opened that they weren't employed at the time. There was no one who had a job when we opened. And even still, we try to maintain that. We are at now about 24, a staff of 24.
Okay.
About 85% to 87% of our employees who work at Comcast are folks who had not been employed.
Can you talk about some of those folks in the different programs? I mean, that,
absolutely.
You know, if you don't mind.
So we have Mrs. Hassan, Ms. Shakria Hassan, who runs our phlebotomy program, and her assistant, Elizabeth Cropper, who was a student at Comcast and is now the assistant phlebotomy teacher. Pierre Goborn, who is our medical billing and coding instructor, who was a student in our first cohort of medical billing and coding classes and graduated and now is the instructor. Opal Harmon, who is my assistant and heads up our facility and our bookkeeping, down to Idis Wilson, who is our security person and does so much more, to Stephanie Mallard, who is born and bred in New Haven and runs our back office for all our programs. Genevieve Walker, who is our chief operating officer, incredibly talented, just like everyone else, who runs the internal functions. Chef Eric Blass, Chef Jenna Martin. So we hired chef instructors as well.
Yes.
Chef Larry Murphy. Then our art instructors, who are young men and women of color as well, who are teaching art to our young people. Oh, man, Chief, who am I? Steve Driffin. Do you know
Steve Driffin? Yes, absolutely.
Runs our Comcast Center at Lincoln Bassett School.
Yes.
What was really important, one, that folks be unemployed at the time because they're empathetic to the sting of unemployment. Two, we wanted to create jobs, but also what was really important, we wanted to hire folks who look like the people who would be coming to Comcast. That was really important, too.
Yes.
That brothers and sisters especially weren't finding jobs, I think most often because of the color of their skin, because their resumes are impeccable, highly educated, highly industrious people who just couldn't find employment. And so what we chose to do was hire folks who looked like the community.
That's great.
And that's really important. I'm really, really proud of that.
That's great.
Yeah.
So Carlton, entrepreneurship program. In our culture, you know, it's like, you know, go get that job, work for the state, get the 9-to-5, don't worry about trying to open up no restaurant and all of that. You know, you got to have that steady paycheck. I mean, you know, let's be honest. I mean, that's been our history, right? And every once in a while, someone like you breaks that, right? But, you know, tell me about how that program is changing young people's minds about that. Because you know what? In America, if you gamble on your talent, you win. Mm. But, you know, most of our families are saying don't gamble on that talent.
That's absolutely right.
You know, so talk about that, please.
That's absolutely right. I recall, one, how the entrepreneurship bug bit me. It was sitting in a class as a sophomore in college, a political science class, Professor Matthew Holden, and we were talking about power and the ability to transform the community. And the discussion was whether one would subscribe to H. Rapp Brown, Sylvia Carmichael, or Martin Luther King.
Yes.
I was a sophomore in 1997, right? So a long time ago. And so Professor Holden listened to us debate the whole matter and then interjected. He said, I think you're all wrong. He said, I would suggest to you the way to empower yourself and transform your community is through entrepreneurship, business ownership. Then he ran down a list of names: Ford, Rockefeller, Mellon, Kodak, Dr. Land at Polaroid. All these names of the Johnson brothers, with Johnson & Johnson. They were all entrepreneurs. These big global businesses were all started by entrepreneurs. And look at how they have transformed the landscape of the world.
Yes.
With the foundations they created, the jobs they created, the wealth they created. I never forgot that. So when I graduated from college and went on to work for a living for a large company, packaging company, I never forgot Dr. Holden's sort of.
So in the back of your mind, urgent, I got to own my own.
I got to do my own. And so I started my company, in a small basement office on Elm Street, a few blocks from here. That, you know, over the next 38 years grew to become, you know, $200 million business, one of the largest black-owned businesses in the country. And it was only because I was introduced and challenged to it by someone I respected. And so what we're doing with the kids at Comcast is that we're exposing them. My original thought was to gather other entrepreneurs I know and have us do workshops and seminars to the youngsters. And I said, well, that's not going to really get it. What I want to do is get a professor, a PhD, a guy who teaches entrepreneurship, because he knows pedagogy of teaching.
That's right.
They know how to reach kids. And so I figured if we just expose kids to entrepreneurship, business ownership, the possibilities of it, that we have done tremendous amount to advance this notion of what risk-taking will do in this society, because you and I both know risk-taking really is what gets rewarded at the end of the day.
Yes.
In this country. So that's why we decided to do it the way we did it, as opposed to simply getting successful entrepreneurs. We wanted to get sort of academic cred, get the professors involved, engage with the students. And it's working. The kids really have an affinity to Dr. Gray. He's a really special teacher. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's interesting is that you mentioned the business plan. And, you know, it's like, look, you don't see kids talk about a business plan. You see, I'm 35 years old, I'm 27, and it's like, Juan, I'm trying to run this business, and, you know, and I'm trying to start this business, and it's like, they're talking to me about a business plan. I got to go find somebody to help me with a business plan, right? Because, hey, they went through high school, college, the whole nine, and never had any idea of what a business plan is supposed to look like.
Yep.
And that's what you're doing.
That's what we're doing.
That's exactly unbelievable. Right. That's
and
fantastic.
The light bulbs are going off because the kids are all, we're thinking about things like this, right? But now we just, so how to organize them.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
to organize your marketing plan. How to organize how you're different than the other guy who's doing this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So now we're exposing them to really see how smart they really are,
right?
In terms of organizing their entrepreneurship plans.
And it's interesting because, I mean, you know, this conversation started off with like, okay, you guys had a meeting, right? And then you talked about doing a feasibility study. I mean, these are all the things that these kids, you're teaching them.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly
that's awesome.
Things that he taught me.
Right.
Really, I will openly say that. Things
yes.
that Carlton taught me, I recall very quickly, he had sent me all these emails of negotiations of our leasing space and with the lawyers and the realtors, and that wasn't my world. I know how to run an organization,
right?
And so I'm reading all of these emails and all these papers about lease negotiating and percentage points and all of this, and I said, and so I went to him, and I said I've read everything you give me, and I said, well, I have to be honest with you. You know, if you're looking for someone who's a finance guy who can understand all of this, because I've read it all, I'm not your guy. I said, if you're looking for someone who can run this organization and get people to believe in something they never thought they could believe in through running this organization, I'm your guy. And he said to me, I'll never forget it. He said, listen, we're going to meet with these realtors. We're going to meet with these attorneys. And when we do, you sit right next to me. And you listen to everything I say. And when you feel like we've met with them enough and you understand what I'm talking about, then you'll meet with them by yourself. And so that's the transformation I'm talking about. So it's not only just these young people who are in the Entrepreneurship Academy. It is everyone who has come in contact with this movement called CONCAT.
Right.
That is what has happened here. And quite frankly, and we need to say this, that we've done this, all that we've talked about thus far, we've done this in less than 5 years.
I remember when, I heard you were leaving Lee,
mm-hmm.
and I had no idea what CONCAT was, and I'm saying to myself, wow, we lost someone, because you know how much I love Lee.
Yes, I do. I sure do.
And I'm saying, wow, you took a leap.
Yeah, great point.
To say, say the least.
Yeah, you did.
You took a leap, sure because, did. I mean, I know you were comfortable there, and you loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking with you.
I did.
You know, and everything that you were doing, and of course, Leaps continues to do great work,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so you saw the vision.
I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it when I met with Carlton and Bill Strickland, and then I read all that was, what the idea was, and talked some with Will Ginsberg, and even a talk with Ann Calabrese, right?
Yeah.
The founder of Leap.
Yes, yes.
I knew that in order for me to live out the calling for me, this was it.
You guys went to Pittsburgh and you
yes.
met with Bill and, and now you got this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was about spreading it, right?
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to ask, where do you go from here,
yes.
guys?
Yeah.
Where do you go from here?
Oh, my goodness. one of the lessons in business I learned early on, Juan, is that you have to sometimes say no.
Okay.
When it's not in your wheelhouse.
Yes.
And I think that is as one of the great contributors to being successful, knowing really what your core competencies are, what your strengths are, what your bandwidth is, And so we've been asked to do an awful lot over the last few years at CONCAT, and we've said no a lot. But we think, for us, it's sort of taking this notion that there's so much potential in the community that can be transformed with the right sort of elements, the right ingredients, that we're looking to expand, not our mission, because our mission is pretty set, but we think we can expand the strategies that we're deploying using additional resources to help stimulate some economic development, some growth in the Dixville, New Wallville area. So that's what we're focusing on right now. We got some really smart people working with us on right structure and what are the right strategies for CONCAT to take a leap beyond the confines of our building to start to have a more direct impact on what's going on in the Dixville, New Wallville corridor. So that's what's next for us.
Yeah. And Eric, you know, tell me about that experiment. I mean, you know, you left from home,
mm-hmm.
and went over to Lincoln Bassett, right? So now mm-hmm. you got this satellite thing going mm-hmm. over here. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so what happened was the Commissioner of Education at the time for the state, Stephen Pryor, had heard about the work we were doing through Garth Harries and other folks, and especially the work we were doing with the young people, and they were about to identify Lincoln Bassett School as a turnaround school for the state. Lincoln Bassett School had been a chronically low-performing school, as you know.
I just interviewed the kids, and I interviewed Miss Clayton.
She's amazing.
Yeah, amazing. What a great coach. Yeah. And it's been a turnaround.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and she mentioned you guys, too, and Steve. So
she's amazing.
Big props. Mm-hmm. So go ahead, continue.
And so he came and asked if we would be a collaborative partner in the turnaround of Lincoln Bassett School. And we did that on two conditions. One, that we would be able to do something about turning the community around while we were trying to turn the school around. Two, that they would put in resources whereby we would transform a part of Lincoln Bassett School to look like CONCAT.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Because if you've been in Lincoln Bassett School a million times,
yes.
It was a very dank, dark
mm-hmm.
place, almost looked like a prison.
Exactly.
And so the commissioner agreed. And so we became the collaborative partner for the turnaround of Lincoln Bassett School through the Commissioner's Network. And then they hired Janet Brown Clayton.
Yes.
And from that collaboration with her, and she put together a team of courageous educators, then I looked for Steve Driffin.
Yes.
Myself and Genevieve Walker looked for Steve Driffin. And Steve came over and we built the CONCAT Center at Lincoln Bassett School, where we are an after-school program, but also an adult training program for those parents and the adults in the New Hallville community.
And so more of that,
yes,
could be in the future.
It's a needed
right.
model. It
yeah.
really, it should be an enduring model, especially for New Haven, that a community-based organization be embedded in a low-performing school.
Question,
yes.
Either one of you, right? Okay, so... you know, there's the conversation about charter schools and magnet schools and, you know, all of that. You know, when you guys first started this, right, you know, was the, how was that received? You know, like in terms of like, okay, you know, are you reinventing the wheel here? Are you leaving us out? Like, what's the, you know, take
wow.
it. Come
wow.
on,
that's a very interesting.
Come on
with it.
Okay, we're not gonna air any dirty laundry. Let's be real.
The reality was,
yes,
and the reality is, we were not. People perceived us of not being of the community.
Okay,
that. Even though we look like community, these are outsiders, and this program they're bringing in is one of a hybrid from a program in Pittsburgh, and what does it have to do with New Haven? And so there was a lot of community resistance to us, and quite frankly, it was surprising to me.
Okay.
It was surprising to me because of, number one, we were leveraging millions and millions of dollars of outside money with no strings. It's just to help the community.
Right.
And so I was really at a loss to understand why so much resistance. And lots of the genesis for that resistance stems from lots of things, like people feeling that there are other nonprofits doing similar kinds of things. There are other initiatives that are more important to us than this new thing called CONCAT. The Q House was one of the things that was mentioned at the time. And so I understood those sensitivities. And so we were taken to the woodshed a few times by community groups, organizations, the basement churches throughout the area, who really challenged us as to what are you guys doing? But we were undeterred. We believe in our mission. We were persuasive, I think, in getting them to understand this is for the community. I mean, there are no strings here. There's nothing we're looking out of this other than help the community. And I think after a while, they saw that we were genuine.
Yeah.
That there was an integrity between what we were saying and what we were doing.
Yeah, we kept our promise.
Yeah.
We kept our promise. We stuck to our mission and our vision. And I recall meeting with, quick. And I called Alderwoman Delphi Clyburn. I called Alderwoman Alfreda Edwards and Brenda Foskey Cyrus and Brenda Jones Barnes at the time and Jeanette Morrison and all of them. And I asked them to please come to CONCAT. We hadn't even opened yet, right? But we, Carlton and I, were making our rounds, talking with the community, meeting with anyone who would meet with us and hear what we were about to do. And also, we would absorb their yeah. angst about us being
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And they met me. Those older women met me in the parking lot of CONCAT. And before we even opened, we walked through CONCAT, and I explained everything that we were going to do, everything to them. And I think after that meeting, and also, quite frankly, us positioning CONCAT as a real community citadel is as soon as we opened. Right, where folks would feel welcomed and feel welcome to have any conversation they would want to have, any event they would want to have. Because quite frankly, CONCAT is the community's. It is not ours. Right? We built it for the people.
Right.
And so that was a hard message, one to convey and one for folks to.
Well, we're skeptical about when people come to us with that.
Yes. Absolutely.
We are rightly so, because so many promises have been made that have not been kept, not been fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I understand the skepticism.
Right.
I mean,
right. Well, you know, let me say this. You know, congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, please come back as you continue to grow with a couple of no's in between for Carlton.
So we have to tell you about, we have a fifth anniversary.
That's right. Oh, come on.
That's right.
It's all
coming
yes.
up.
Okay.
Marking our fifth year of operation.
When is that?
June 22nd.
June 22nd. 6 p.m. I will forward all the information to you, Juan.
Please.
June 22nd, 6 p.m. To 10 p.m. at Cascade. We will be celebrating our 5 years of existence.
Okay.
With the keynote is Bill Strickling.
Oh, wow.
And we will be honoring Carlton Highsmith, Marna Borgstrom, Will Ginsberg, Bill Graustein, Dr. Dorsey Kendrick, and Karen Prisler.
Would you be willing to, is Bill going to be here just that weekend? Is it possible for you guys to bring him in to talk to the community a little bit?
That'd be
you
great.
Know, about his vision and or even a phoner with you guys, you know?
Absolutely, we'll arrange that.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Absolutely.
That would
Absolutely.
Be great. I mean, obviously, you know, his name keeps coming back up through
yes.
all of this. And
it's incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. I was with him 2 weeks ago in New York. He asked me to attend a meeting at the Rockefeller Foundation.
Yes.
His organization, the one that we're patterned after, has been adopted by the Rockefeller Foundation as a facilitator for their 100 Resilient Cities Initiative, where they've selected 100 cities around the world to deploy millions, if not billions, of dollars to help those cities bounce back. And Bill's model is one that's going to be used for workforce development and after school programming.
Well, we definitely got to get him here, and I want you guys to come back, and I want to come and visit, and I want to hear from your students
yes.
And your teachers
and
everyone there, so that we can spread the word
to
the rest of the community. You know, guys, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks,
thank
Juan.
You, Juan. I appreciate
Thanks for having us, man.
Right. Finally, Eric.
Yes, brother.
Great stuff. Juan Castillo with you is the Electric Drum. I know you've been inspired. I know I have. We will see you next week.